continuing on the elaboration of the trait of diligence. He had said that just as it is necessary to cultivate watchfulness to avoid transgressing the negative prohibitions, it's equally important to cultivate a attitude of diligence toward the things that one must do. The Tira, you can see, ki teva ha'odam kovid me'oid, that a person's nature is very heavy. By heavy, he means that gravity pulls him down. I mean, the natural state of a living thing is essentially to do nothing and to hibernate. Ki ofrius ha'chumres gas, because the earth-like character of a person of which man was the earth-like character of a person, after all, man was created out of earth, and the nature then of man is to be at rest. Therefore, it's just natural that a person does not desire to exert himself in labor and do anything. The only thing that a person will do is that which he is driven to do. So that just like an animal, if an animal needs food, it searches for food. If it has enough food and drink and everything is satisfied, it lies down and rests and does nothing. You know, you drive through the jungle and in Africa, and you don't go out other than early in the morning, very early in the morning, when the animals are on prey, or when they go to water, or toward dusk, when they go toward water. Otherwise, you'll never see anything, because during the day, having eaten and having drunk, the animals just lay under the tree and do nothing. You can't see anything. Right. So he says, that's the natural state of man. Therefore, anyone who wishes to merit to do the service of Hashem, must overcome and override his natural inclinations, and he must strengthen himself and make an effort and be zealous in pursuing what he believes to be the will of Hashem, because if he just leaves himself at the mercy of his inertia, there's no question that he will not succeed. And this is why the Tana said, have az kanomer, be fierce or bold as a leopard, the kal kanesha, and light as an eagle, v'rotz katsvi, and swift as a deer, v'giver ka'ari, and strong as a lion, lasos ritzoin avicha shebashamayim, in order to do the will of your Father in heaven. So there's a strong effort necessary to overcome inertia. Otherwise, laziness dominates. Now, of course, that's the whole concept of avodas Hashem. The whole concept of serving Hashem is to overcome one's natural tendencies. And this is why it is told that a chosid came into the Tzemach Tzedek and complained that he doesn't feel a desire to learn Torah, and he doesn't feel a desire to daven, and what kind of advice can the Rebbe give him that he should have a desire? So the Tzemach Tzedek says, what can I do? I do have a desire to daven. I do have a desire to learn. What can I do? Meaning, if you have a natural desire for it, then what's the avoda? And then there's no service in it. You know, if you happen to be born with an inclination that this is what you want to do, he says, then there's no Avodas Hashem in it. And tzaddikim were known to have tried to overcome their whatever inertia they could find within themselves, because they had so purified themselves that now it was natural that they felt that this was no good anymore. You know, if it's natural, so what am I achieving? So they always sought new frontiers which to overcome, and that anything that came natural was just not good enough, because that was no longer any avodah. And this is the constant process of growth, always to extend the frontier. So those of us who get into the habit of doing things and overcome our laziness, so it becomes now second nature to do the kinds of things that we do, are not advancing. In order to advance, you constantly have to progress, and you have to feel some effort, and you have to feel that you're sweating at it. And the Chachomim, the sages, listed among the things that needs reinforcement, Torah u'masim tovim, study of Torah and doing good deeds, doing mitzvahs. U'mikra molehu, and it is explicit in the Torah, Chazak ve'amatz me'oid, that Hashem tells Yeshua, strengthen yourself and be very courageous. Lishmar la'asos kechol ha'Torah, to do and observe the entire Torah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi, that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe instructed you. And why was this necessary? Why chazak ve'amatz, strengthen yourself and be very courageous? Ki chizu godol tzorich, because it requires a great deal of effort and reinforcement, to one who wants to overcome his nature and do the opposite of what his natural inclination is. Shlomo Melech repeatedly stresses this exhortation of Zabir Oisoi Esroya Ha'atzlo, when he saw the evil contained in indolence, they are hefset hagodol hanimshach mimeno, and the enormous loss and destruction that result from laziness. And if you look through Mishlei, there are innumerable references to otzel, to laziness. And so Shlomo HaMelech has in Mishlei, he has several characteristics that he elaborates upon. Talks about leitzim, the evil of scoffing, a rosha, wickedness, and he talks a great deal about atzlus, about the destructiveness of being lazy. He also talks about pesi, a fool or a dullard. And again, he also talks about the value of chokhmah and the positive things, but he really elaborates very graphically the evil of laziness. I mentioned about the evil of folly, of foolishness. The Rav Shetzarov had no tolerance whatever for fools. And he used to say that if he'll see a fool being led into Gan Eden, into heaven, he will run after him and shout, "A fool is still a fool." So they asked him, somebody asked him, "Look, what do you want from a fool?" The Gemara says that before a person is born, it is decreed upon him whether he'll be a chocham or a shaita, whether he'll be wise or be a fool. He says, "What do you want? It's not the person's fault if he's a fool. That was a divine decree." So he said, "Yes, there's also a divine decree that you're supposed to eat matzah." He says, "So how much matzah do you have to eat?" "You have to eat a kazayas, the size of an olive, right? And you fulfill the mitzvah, right?" Somebody wants to be machmel, wants to perfect it, do more than that. So he eats a bigger piece of matzah, right? He says, if it was decreed upon him to be a fool, right, he could have been Yotzi, he could have fulfilled that divine decree with a minimum of foolishness. Right? He could have been a small fool. Right? Who told him to be a machmir and perfect himself? Why do you have to be a bigger fool than you're supposed to be? So he had absolutely no use for a fool. So Shlomo HaMelech has a list of all of these bad characteristics, but he really does a takeoff on atzlus, on laziness, and just very graphically describes the lazy person lying in bed and not getting to move, and then the thousands of rationalizations that a lazy person will make in order to justify his doing nothing. And so he says, what happens with a lazy person is not that he doesn't say that he's not going to do anything. It's not that way. He says it's ma'at shena. I say, I'm just going to sleep a little bit longer. Me'at tenuma. I say, I'm just going to take a little bit nap. Me'at chibukedan. Just, I want to sit with my hands folded and a little relaxed. I'm not going to do something. Just a little bit. Lishkov, to lie a little bit around. He says, and if you do that, uvol ki mahalach reishecha, your poverty suddenly comes upon you, umachsoiroch, and your lacking comes ki ish mogein, like an armed robber, right? Suddenly hitting you. It's the tortoise and the hare. The hare believed that he's going to win the race. He just sits back and rests a little bit. And so the tortoise overtakes him and wins. And he says, that's what happens. Ki hine he otzel, because a lazy person, even though he may not be doing anything actively that is bad, he brings upon himself evil and destruction by being totally inactive. The Omar, and Shlomo HaMelech further says, Gam misrape b'melachtoi, a person who is lax in his work, Ochul of Almashkis, is a brother to the destroyer, is a brother to the Sultan, is in compliance, is in cahoots, but there's a better word than that. Right? He is a partner to the Sultan. Ki afal pi she'einenu Hamashkis ha'oiseh saro biyodov, why does he consider him Ochul of Almashkis, a brother to the Sultan? Because he isn't, he can't say he's doing what the Sultan says in the sense of doing actually evil. He says, but he's related, closely related to that. Because even though he is not doing anything actively evil, don't think that he's too far from it. It's like he's his blood brother. There is a tendency among people, particularly people who feel a lack of confidence about themselves, and they are terrified by the idea that they might fail at something, that in order to avoid failure, they do nothing. And one way to avoid failure is when you get up in the morning, pull the sheets over your head, and stay in bed till 4:30 in the afternoon, and by that time you probably can't do too many things wrong because all your possibilities, all your opportunities are closed. So you do nothing. And there's many people who figuratively stay in bed till 4:30 in the afternoon, if not actually, simply out of fear that they're going to fail. And the question is, well, they then have the greatest failure of all because they don't achieve anything. And yet, to some people, passive failure is easier to accept than active failure. To do something and to result in a failure is a terrible ego blow to them, and they are terrified of that, and in order to avoid failure they do nothing. Well, if you do nothing, you're going to fail. Yeah, but somehow or other, psychologically, passive failure is more easily accepted. It's rationalized, well, if I would do it, I'm sure I would be able to succeed, but I just didn't get around to doing it.
I don't want to do it
is not a good without a rationalization. People generally will not say, I don't want to do it, if it's something that they should do. But they will find 1,000 ingenious rationalizations. And I can't, at the moment, nothing comes to mind. But there are many, many rationalizations.
I had a friend, he graduated high school with me. He didn't want to... a very bright guy. He didn't go to college. He just stayed around, I don't know, hanging around, so to speak. He went to the University of Chicago, took a test. I was a beginning freshman. He placed in beginning freshman. He could have, beginning sophomore. He could have gone right into sophomore class there and said, I don't think they have much to teach me. And he never went. Just hung around.
Right, and his attitude was, they don't have much to teach me. There's any one of countless rationalizations that a person will come up with to justify doing nothing, when behind it all may very well be a fear of failure. It's interesting that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says that when the Bnei Yisrael, when the Israelites came out of Egypt and they were in the desert and they were given the commandment of building the Mishkan, the intricacies of work on the Mishkan were absolutely fantastic. I mean, the curtains that were woven in such a manner that they had one design on one side and another design on the other side. And this is an extremely artful thing to be able to do, to make a weave that appears with two different designs right side up on both sides. And he says, when Moshe Rabbeinu told them that this is what Hashem wants them to do, people volunteered to do the work even though they had never had any kind of artistic experience in doing it. But simply they said, if Hashem says that this is what we have to do, then we're going to do it and it's going to work out. And with that kind of confidence that Hashem will help them, they began and they did it. And he says, this is, even though that was an overt ness, an overt miracle, he says, that's the kind of attitude that a person should have. Now, I'm not saying that a person should therefore volunteer to go on the stage and sell tickets for $100 for a concert when he is tone deaf and saying, Hashem is going to help me. Because we never found anywhere that Hashem instructed him to give a concert. Right? But for those things that a person is supposed to do and the demands that are legitimately made upon him, a person should have the confidence that he should do that which is right and that which is expected of him, and Hashem will help him and not have the fear that he might fail. The Omaroid, Shlomo HaMelech goes on to say, to give a graphic illustration of the evil of a indolent person. That which can happen to an individual and something that we can see with our own eyes every day. And he says, it's a beautiful description. I passed by the field of a lazy person. I passed by the vineyard of a person who did not use good sense. The whole field was grown over with thistles. The entire face was covered with thorns. And later on he talks about how the fence was broken and then the place was just totally neglected and a shambles. The Echza Onoichi Oshi Sleepy. And when I saw that, I took to heart. Lo Isi, I saw it, Lokachti Musa. And I took a lesson from it. What was that lesson? Me'achenois, if you sleep a little bit. Me'atenumois, and you slumber a little bit. Uvomis Halach Eshecha, then your poverty comes a marching and attacks you like an armed robber. It's interesting. Lo Isi, Lokachti Musa. I saw and I took a teaching, I took a lesson from it. This is what I mentioned here, the story with, I think it was Reb Chaim, Reb Yosher Be'er of Brisk, who saw a procession of three horses with wagons loaded with hay. And they were in series, walking one after another. He was walking with his Talmidim. So the second horse in line was eating the hay from the first wagon. The third horse was eating from the wagon, from the second wagon. The first horse has nothing to eat. So he turned to his talmidim and he says, look, that first horse gets some sort of advantage because his load becomes lighter as the second horse eats the hay. The third horse, his load doesn't become lighter, but he has an advantage that he eats from the front of him, the wagon in front of him. He says the middle horse has it best. He gets to eat, and his load becomes lighter. He says when the Rambam says to avoid all extremes and to keep in moderation, he says because people at the extremes, exercising extremes, usually don't benefit. And if you keep in moderation, it's the best of all possible worlds. So I was, when I read that, I was thinking, yeah, it's an interesting lesson that one learns. But the point is that some people can sit down and learn a Sefer Musa, learn an ethical work, and walk away not having been impressed with anything. And Rabbi Yashabel can walk on the street, down the street and see a procession of three horses and come up with a Musa from. Right? Now, a lot of people will walk by and neglect the building, board it up, right? And they walk by and it's nothing. Right? Shlomo HaMelech walks by a field that's not taken care of, and he comes up with a ethical teaching from it as to how that applies to him. The just as important as anything else is Ro'isi. When I saw it, Lakach di Musa, and I took instruction from it. Even just the simple, literal meaning of these verses, which is something which will actually occur to a person who neglects his field. The Chachamim explained this well, and this is what they say, that it was overgrown with thistles. This is talking about a person who neglects the study of Torah, that he wants to understand a particular passage and he doesn't find the meaning of it because he's not paid attention to learn. And since he has not studied properly, he can make grave mistakes in law, right? And says that something which is clean is tame, is impure, and something which is impure is clean. And he then breaches the fences that the Chacham set up. And this is what happened, you know, the traditional story of an individual who came to a Rav and he told him that he had two shilas occurred to him. And one he took care of himself, but the other he didn't know what to do about. The one that he took care of about himself, he says that he had, his wife was cooking cheese kreplach in one pot, and she was cooking some meat in another pot. And they had a woman in the house who was helping with the cleaning and with the work in the kitchen, and she went to taste the cheese kapla, and she by mistake returned the cheese kapla into the pot of meat. And when she realized she made a mistake, she took the kapla out and put it back into the pot of kebla. So he says, well, that was a simple thing, because he remembers hearing that to his goy muta, that a mistake that a heathen makes, you don't have to call it to his attention, right? And it's permissible, a permissible thing. So he says, well, this was a mistake that a non-Jew made, so there was no problem over it, right? So everything is kosher. He says that he figured out very simply. Now, the difficult shaila that he had was that his wife had made helzel for Shabbos, which was a delicacy. You take the skin of the chicken neck and you fill it as you would a casing. And then you sew it up and you cook it in the chon, and it comes out very good. Well, after she had cooked the chicken neck, she took out the thread. And used the thread to sew a button on his trousers. Now he wants to know, is he allowed to wear the trousers in the 9 days because it was sewed with a thread that was filled in. He says, now that's a problem that he could not solve by himself. As ridiculous as it sounds, the kinds of shyness that people without any knowledge can come up with is that they will maximize trivias, things which have no significance at all, and they will trivialize important things. The Shah Gesalia was a rabbi in Mitz. He asked the community whether as their rabbi, is he allowed to make an entry into the community pinkus. Each community had a book of chronicles in which they recorded not only the historic events, but also the practices which were established in the community by its earlier citizens. So they said, yes, he has that right. So he took and he wrote down the Ten Commandments and the chronicles. And he asked them, why did he do that? He says, because I repeatedly get people come with shyness, with questions about practices. Are they permitted to do this? Isn't this in violation of a community practice? Isn't this in violation? He says, so the people take this very seriously, the community traditions. He says, yet when it comes to such thing as the Aser Sadibus, he said, people dealing disrespectfully with their parents, not being careful of proper observance of Shabbos, sometimes taking an oath which is not absolutely true. He says, violation of the Ten Commandments. I figure if they put the Ten Commandments into the community chronicles, maybe people will respect them also. Right? And that's what happens if people lack knowledge, then trivia becomes important. It's like the individual who knocked on the door of a Hebrew bookstore on Shabbos, and there was no answer, and he kept on pounding. Now the proprietor lived upstairs, and so he put his head out the window and he says, it's Shabbos, the store is closed. He says, what do you mean the store is closed? My wife had a baby and I need a Shirah Malas, a little portion of Tillim that is in an amulet, as it were, to hang up in the child's room. So he says, well, the store is closed, it's Shabbos. He says, what? With your silly superstitions, my wife shouldn't have Shirah Malas? So, you know, some people who trivialize important things and overemphasize things that are trivial. To be continued. Ready?
Yeah.
We're continuing the discussion of the Midas Azrizus, the trait of diligence, and he is Ramchal is explaining the danger of indolence and laziness. And he says, Vahainu, ki roas ha'otzel in above bas achas, does not come suddenly. He had mentioned before that Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei talks about passing by a field of a lazy person and seeing it overgrown with thorns and its fence broken. And he says the using the analogy of a broken fence, he then goes over to another phrase where Shlomo HaMelech, this time in Koheles, Ecclesiastes, uses the expression of a broken fence. And he says, "Ha'peiret skeda yishchena nochash." One who breaches a fence will be bitten by a snake. And he's now tying these two ideas together, having said that the indolent person, the lazy person, allows his fields to be neglected and the fence to be broken. V'hainu, he goes on to say, "Ki ro'as ha'otzel in above basachas." The harm that occurs to the lazy person does not come suddenly, ela ma'at ma'at, but very gradually, little bit by bit, v'loy sheyeda v'yagishpo, without his even knowing or being aware of it. Ki hine hu nimshach me'ro el ro, because he is drawn from evil to evil, ad sheyimotze tavua betachlis hara, until he finds himself sunk in absolute evil. Now, as many times as I've had the opportunity to discuss Mesilas Yesharim with a group, no one has ever understood it as concretely and as fully as a person who had a history of alcohol or addiction. They really knows what he means. They really know what he means by this. Where he says the harm does not come suddenly, but very, very gradually without the person being aware of it. Some people ask, when we talk about alcoholism as being a disease, they say, "What? In what way is a disease? The person picks up a bottle, picks up a drink, and drinks it. So that's why is it a disease? He's doing it himself." And the answer is that if a person has a disease of being allergic to a certain food, so he's found out that each time he eats strawberries, he breaks out in hives. Each time he eats chocolate, he gets a violent headache. And this happens a few times, and he sets up an association of cause and effect. And he realizes, I can't eat strawberries and I can't eat chocolate. But that's because neither strawberries nor chocolate affect the thinking processes. One affects the skin, the other affects the blood flow to the skull. The nature of alcohol is different in that if the person has that peculiar sensitivity, alcohol affects him differently than it does the non-alcoholic and causes him to think differently. Now, we cannot condemn a person for picking up his first drink because society virtually demands it of him. I mean, you make a bar mitzvah or a chasana and you don't serve alcohol and you're going to be known as the greatest tightwad in the community. So you're expected to serve it. Now, what happens is that every individual, I'd like to see anybody make a chasana and not serve alcohol.
It's not. Well, not for the alcoholic content. It's a tradition for years.
Wait, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying taking the first drink is socially expected.
Right.
It's not only accepted, it is not only condoned, it's even urged. I'm not arguing. I'm just saying the first drink is not socially discouraged. It's socially condoned. Right. Now what happens is that an individual who has this particular sensitivity, which appears to be genetic perhaps, that alcohol affects him differently. Right? It doesn't affect his skin. Right? It affects his thought processes. Right? And he begins to think differently and feel differently. But the very system that he is supposed to use to recognize that it's causing him a problem, that's the system that's being affected. So, strawberries affect the skin. The brain is intact. The brain can say, hey, strawberries affect your skin. The problem with alcohol is that when it affects the thought processes, the thought processes are no longer intact so that the person can identify that alcohol is doing it. Right? So what happens is he goes on drinking. Right? Now, other people, after a while, as the process continues to increase to where it gets to be of serious proportions, because, of course, alcohol has a tolerance effect and the body becomes immune to its effect, so whatever one drink did for him no longer does for him, right? And he needs alcohol, needs a beer in order to go to sleep, or he needs a drink in order to socialize because it feels very awkwardly going to a room full of people, and one drink didn't do it, and so now he needs two drinks and later three drinks, and you say, well, why doesn't he recognize? Because if he's got this condition, alcohol renders him incapable of recognizing because that's what it does to the thought processes. Now, what happens then is, as Shlomo HaMelech says over here, bit by bit, he begins to have destructive effects, but is totally unaware of it. This is what we call in the business denial. He is unaware that that's happening. And is going to be unaware until tavua betachlis haro, until he sinks into an absolute bottom of evil. And that's what we call the rock bottom phenomenon. Now, it's interesting how different people have a different rock bottom phenomenon. What is the tachlis haro? What is the absolute evil that's going to arouse a person? I had a young man who, when I met him, he was 49 years old. He admitted himself to the hospital for withdrawal from alcohol. He had been in his younger days, an executive in the Mellon Stewart Construction Corporation, and was apparently very, very capable, and at a very young age was promoted to one of the top executive positions in the corporation. But he drank beer, drank quite heavily. His wife was very critical of it. He said he doesn't have a problem because he only drinks beer. And when the wife gave him an ultimatum that either that or she, either he gives up the drinking or she leaves with the children, he thought she was being totally unreasonable. He gave her a divorce. She took the children and she left. He continued to drink, and as the condition continued to progress, people at the company told him that it's affecting his work. And his interpretation was that they are envious because no one in his of his age had ever risen to such a position, and they're simply jealous of him. Until he was fired. And then he said, well, it's obvious why he was fired. He was fired because everybody else had conspired because they were jealous of his success. He then continued to drink away whatever money he had, and then he had a house which he lost. He drank away the house, and then he drank away his car. When I saw him, he was 49 years old, and he was on welfare, sometimes sleeping in the backs of abandoned trucks or whatever. He stayed in the hospital for 2 days, and he left against medical advice. I didn't see him again until 2 years later, when he came in and sat down, you know, with his very penitent, and he said, I know you're angry at me, Doc. I said, why would I be angry at you? He said, because I walked out on you last time. I said, oh, you didn't walk out on me at all. I'm fine. You know, you walked out on you. He says, well, this time I'm going to stay and I'll do whatever you say. I said, Jim, what's different about you now than 2 years ago? Why are you more ready now? And he said, Doc, you know how much you get for selling your blood? I said, nope. He says, 12 beers. I said, well, I guess that's hitting bottom when you start selling your blood for your drink. He says, I guess not. I've been doing that for a year. I said, then why are you here now instead of a year ago? He said, you know, Doc, when I was with Mellon Stewart, I was very active in the United Way drive, and 1 year I practically ran the drive single-handedly. This past week, I've been panhandling quarters on Liberty Avenue, and I can't live like that. That's interesting. Here is a bright person, okay, a very capable person, rises to a top executive position, loses his family, loses his job, loses his home, loses his car, sells his blood for beer, and nothing brings him to realization that he's got an alcohol problem until he starts panhandling quarters. But, yeah, it's a highly relative thing as to what is going to make an individual realize. And until that point, Jim did not realize that he had a problem. The whole world was at fault. Nobody understood it. He used to tell me after he recovered that after he was fired, he used to sit in a bar and drink beer and watch the door, fantasizing that at any moment now one of the headhunters for the 500, for the Fortune 500, is going to come over and ask him to become the chief executive officer of the corporation. He said, it didn't dawn upon me that the headhunters are not going to look for a CEO in a bar. But it was perfectly logical. That's the kind of thinking that can go on with alcohol. Now, what Yeshaya Novi says, what Isaiah says, is a beautiful phrase. No veloy miyayin. They stumbled, and not from wine. Tohu veloy mishecha. They wandered, geblunged. They wandered without drinking ale. And what he's saying is chastising the people of his generation that their behavior is typical drunkard behavior. without the use of alcohol. Now, it's not at all unusual that you see people's emotions so distorted, people's judgments so distorted by emotions that they are in an absolute denial of what's happening. Now, this is things, certainly professionally, we see this constantly. An individual is absolutely certain that what he's doing is right and just has no way of recognizing and the harm that is happening. And this is what the Shlomo HaMelech says and what the Ramchal is elaborating on, that the lazy person with his rationalizations does not recognize his laziness. And things will continue little by little. Now, if what happened was that the individual started drinking, and on the fourth time that he drinks, he has a horrible blackout, like a friend of mine said, I have a psychiatrist friend who became sober at age 50, and he said, the worst thing that happens is to drink like I did. I never got into any trouble. He says, if you're going to have a drinking problem, drink when you're young, drink like crazy, get into a mess of trouble, and get it over with. He says, I never got into any trouble in my life, and I continued pickling my brain until I was age 50. He says, that's the worst way to do it. So he says the problem with the lazy person is also that if immediately, with the beginning of his laziness, some catastrophe would happen, then chances are he'd be aroused and alerted earlier as to what's happening. He said, but that isn't what happens. It comes gradually, bit by bit. There's no dramatic, traumatic event to shake him up. And so it goes bit by bit, and like a house of cards, you can build up a house of cards, and then all of a sudden it falls down. And this is what happens to the indolent person who neglects his duties, neglects his obligations. Things can go on very gradually without his perceiving what's happening, and then he suddenly finds himself at rock bottom. Hine batchilo, originally when the process starts, eina ella machzir ha-terech ha-shehoi yiro'ilo. It starts off by just minimizing the amount of effort that he should put into something. U'mizeh nimshach, and using this according to what the Chachomim use the example, and explain the example of the allegory of the person with the lazy person with the neglected field as the person who does not apply himself to Torah. He says, initially he doesn't study enough. U'mizeh nimshach, and from that comes shela yilmad b'Torah k'chol ha-Torah, that he does not study Torah adequately. U'b'nei cheschon alimud, when he doesn't study adequately, k'shiyova ha-kach lilmud, when he'll then decide to try to learn techzalei ha-avonah. Right? Now he lacks the understanding of it, so it becomes a monumental thing. So had he started initially and learned gradually, he would have been able to absorb. But because he neglects it, now all of a sudden if something wakens him up, well, maybe I should be learning, so he sits down learning it. You know, but now the group is way ahead. They're in calculus, and he hasn't picked up addition and multiplication. V'hine ilule hoiso geremes rosoi bozer, gemeres rosoi bozer, if this were the end of the process, kvar ha'isarabah, that would also be enough that he remains ignorant. Achoid misrabah v'heleches, but the process continues to increase progressively, b'mashah b'ratzoyse al-karponim li'yashavah parashavah perikahu. With his lack of understanding, and now he looks at the problem in front of him, in this case, he looks at the question in Torah or Halacha, hini'igalah b'ponim shaloi kalacha. Now he has to give some sort of explanation to it, and he doesn't know the right way to do it. Right? So he'll do it the wrong way. And applying this to Torah, he gives a improper interpretation of Torah because he doesn't understand, because he never learned it properly. The Yashchi Sa'emes, he destroys the truth, Yafech Havchon distorts it. The Yaver ala Takonos, and he transgresses the ordinances, the Yifroses Hagedorim, and he breaks the barriers that the Chachamim have set up. The Seifei Kaloya, and the end is destruction, Kemishpat Kol Peres Gedol, like anyone who breaks down the protective barriers. Omar Shlomo said that when he passed by this neglected field of the indolent person. Ve'echza onoichi oshis libi. I saw it and I took it to heart. Hisboinanti ala dover hazeh. And I meditated and thought upon the thing. And as a result of that, ve'ro'isi goitel hara sheboy. Then I saw the great evil that is inherent in laziness. It's like a venom which doesn't remain in one place, but like a malignancy which spreads very slowly. And sometimes its effect might not even be noted until the person dies from it. And that's why he refers to it, just a little bit extra sleep, just a little bit slumber, just a little bit sitting with your hands folded and doing nothing, getting in oneself accustomed to lazy practices. And then the end is, and suddenly your poverty is upon you, and your lack hits you like a armed robber. Vihine, anachnu roim, we can see beinenu, we can see with our own eyes. Kama v'kama pomim, how often it happens. Shekvar libo shel odom yodeach evosoi v'nisames atzle masheroi la'atzolos nafshe. That a person does see and does understand what his obligations are and what he's supposed to do. What are his obligations as a result of what the Creator, what Hashem has put upon him? Even though he has an intellectual awareness and knows what it is supposed to, what he's supposed to do, he neglects it. Not because he isn't aware of what it is that he's supposed to do, and not for any other reason. Only because he has gotten into habits of laziness and it has increased so greatly that it's difficult for him to overcome. And again, the example of the alcoholic is clear. People come to an awareness that, yes, they are drinking too much and it is causing them a great deal of difficulty, but they're in it so far that they cannot stop. And this is when the habit, using that as an example, similarly to indolence, if a person allows it to progress and doesn't catch it in the bud, it becomes a habit which, even if he recognizes what it is that he's supposed to do, finds himself unable to do so. And then he will begin to give himself rationalizations. Let me eat first and then I'll get to it. Let me just take a little nap. Right now it's hard for me to get out of the house. I'm undressed already. Am I going to get dressed? It's too hot outside. It's too cold outside. It's too rainy. All other excuses and all rationalizations and all pretenses that lazy people have. There is just no dearth of rationalizations to defend what you want to do. And one patient who thought he was not an alcoholic because he only drank beer. And no matter what people told him. Now, this is a bright person. This is a person who is a top executive. When he began having physical symptoms, began having liver disease, began having some physical symptoms, he could no longer deny there was something wrong. And here's where rationalization comes in. He concluded, because he was drinking between a half a case and close to a case of beer a day, that his body can't handle that much fluid. So it was not the alcohol, it was the fluid. Right? So he switched to whiskey. So he drank scotch and soda. Right? Now, he continued then to feel bad, and the symptoms continued to get worse, and he decided it was the carbonated water. So he switched to whiskey and water, and when he continued to feel bad, he eliminated the water.
Now, we're not talking about some sort of fool over here, but a person who in every other way was intelligent, and this distortion of thinking led him to this bizarre behavior. And like I say, Yeshaya said that we often behave like a drunk without the alcohol. I've seen individuals in other ways behave in a very similar fashion. Right? That which is the problem that they won't address. Right? They'll address everything else but that. And Ubenkoch Ubenkoch, using his example, this time as with the indolent person avoiding the proper study of Torah and not obtaining the guidelines as how we should live. HaTorah munachas, Torah is neglected, va'avodah mevutalas, and his duty is dispensed with. V'ha'odam oizev esboiroi, and the individual forsakes Hashem. Hu ma'ase Shlomo Omer, and this is why Shlomo Melech says, ba'tzaltayim, through laziness, yimach ha'mekorah, the ceiling will sink in, the roof will fall in, because a person will not attend to it. Ubishiflus yodayim, with keeping your hands inactive and not working, yidlof habayis, the house will leak. The ulam imtishalas pios, and if you will ask the lazy person, yovaloch b'mamorim rabbi mamorachamim, he will quote all kinds of authorities for you as to why he should behave the way he's doing. V'hamikrois minaksuvim, he'll bring you psukim, verses from the scriptures, Vatonis, Menaseich, and the logical answer, Asher Kulam Yodaloi, everything serves to teach him and to guide him, Lefidata Mishubeshes, according to his distorted thinking, Lahokal Olav Lanich Mimnuch Haslosev, to justify why he's doing what he's doing. Vuhu Eina Roya, he cannot see, this is a beautiful expression, he cannot see, She'eina Tainis Hein Vatomim Nelodelem Meshikul Daitoi, that these are not legitimate judgments, but their origin is a production of his laziness. He cannot possibly recognize rationalization. This is so absolutely true. And when you ask a person, well, why can't you, don't you realize, don't you see? And the answer is, you talk to a blind person and say, don't you see? The blind person cannot see, and the person who has this visual, this psychological perception distorted by his emotions, in this case laziness, will find you psukim, will find you authorities to justify what he's doing. But they come from his laziness, not from good judgment. I shall be yoisi geveres boy, because when it controls him, mata daita v'sich lalos ha'ta'enes eloi, that turns his thinking and intelligence toward all of these rationalizations. I shall yishma l'kerach ha'chomim v'anshiyadei anachoyma, so that he will be deaf to the guidance of wise people who will tell him what the proper thing to do. What Shlomo Melech screams, and he says, it's not what he says, he screams it. Chocham otzel be'enov, a lazy person is wiser in his own eyes, mishiva mishivetom, than seven sages. He knows better than everyone else. The laziness does not permit him to even attend to anything that anybody else says to him. He considers everybody else mistaken. Everybody else is mistaken. Everybody else is a fool. He alone is the only one who is wise and knows the truth. Now again, it may be easy to understand, and it may be difficult to understand, but the person who's gone through this with his own experience in alcoholism knows exactly what he's talking about. The rationalizations, the refusal to listen to reason, the distorted thinking, and when they look back and they say, my God, I thought that. I mean, how could I be possibly so stupid? But that's something that we see in retrospect. And, of course, the importance of it is that even without alcohol, we may have various kinds of emotions that deter us from seeing the truth as it is, even though we're absolutely convinced, and we'll swear in a stack of Bibles, that what we're seeing is reality and that our thought process authority justified. To be continued.